The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Joined on this episode of the Women's Football Podcast by Arsenal and England defender Casey Stoney, someone I've been trying to get on the show for a little while, but she's been quite busy this year. But thank you for joining me, Casey. How are you doing?
I'm really good today, thank you.
I guess there's nowhere better to start than let's sort of work our way backwards. Obviously, last time out, Arsenal reached the Continental Cup final, your second final of the season. How pleased were you to reach what will be your... Well, it'll be your second final this year, but it'll be your second Continental Cup final in a row, having reached the competition final last year, funnily enough, against Arsenal.
Yeah, obviously really, really delighted, and I thought it was a massively positive response from the girls, having had the start we did at the beginning of the season. To win an FA Cup and be in a Continental Cup final, I think is fantastic. But we don't just want to be there, we want to go there and we want to win it.
Difficult year for Arsenal. I spoke to Leah Williamson recently and we spoke about the indifferent start that you had, but you found a bit of form second half of the season. What do you put that down to?
I think there's a lot of factors. I think I think people really need to realise that you take 8 or 9 players out of any starting 11 and it's going to affect the team. And I think 8 or 9 people walked out the door at Arsenal at the end of last season. So, you know, myself included, coming in as a new player along with others, it was always going to take time to gel. We also were missing Niamh Fahey and Jordan Nobbs through sort of long-term injuries. They've both come back in and I think they've massively contributed to us having a positive second half of the season. Yes, we've stuck together. I think people also need to realise we've been through 5 different management teams this season. So it just shows you what the girls have had to kind of cope with and put up with. But I think we've stayed strong as a unit. We didn't start well. I think after the break we've come back with a much more positive record. You can see that in the league. We're winning games. We've got ourselves to a second cup final. And obviously we've already got the FA Cup in the cabinet. So is that a poor season? I think a lot of clubs would be happy to be where we are now.
You mentioned 5 management teams. You've got the new coach that's come in from the Western New York Flash. Have you met him yet? What have you made of him so far, if you have?
Yeah, I met Pedro last week. He took our first session. It seems like a really laid-back, nice guy. Very, very keen on everything we can do with the ball. Being obviously from Spain, I suppose they like to keep possession, don't they? So it'll be interesting to see what his thoughts and ideas are moving forward. But I'm really looking forward to working with him.
Could be the next Gerard Piqué or Carlos Puyol case, playing out of the back like Barcelona. You never know. We'll talk a little bit about Arsenal as we sort of continue on, but I want to talk a bit about England as well. Latest squad was announced against Montenegro. You're not involved on this occasion, but I guess from your perspective, still very much aiming for the World Cup next year and any friendlies that might occur between now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. My sleeves are rolled up, I've got my gloves on and I'm ready to fight. You know, I've done it before in 2005, I had to fight to get in the team and I'm ready to do it again in 2014. I'm just a little bit older now, but, you know, still life left in these legs yet. I did have a conversation with Mark before this squad was announced. He did actually inform me that he was going to leave me out. He said he was going to leave quite a few of the senior players out, give us a bit of rest with the heavy league programme. Obviously disappointed not to be in Montenegro, but I'm sure the girls will go there and obviously looking to get a 100% record of wins in qualification. And you know, I just got to keep doing what I'm doing for Arsenal, keep trying to play well, and hopefully I'll be involved in the next squad.
Not played maybe as much as you would have liked during this qualification period, but still very much a senior player in terms of being in and around the squad. Are you still getting a lot of communication with players, still coming to you for advice? And obviously one of the more senior heads in the squad, I'm guessing that players still look at you as someone that they can come and speak to when they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to think that they still feel they can come to me, and they still do. You know, I might not be captain anymore, but I still like to think I give honest and hopefully knowledgeable advice. I still love being part of that squad. I still want to be part of that squad. Yes, I haven't played as much as I'd like to have. Obviously, going from England captain to only playing 1 game in a year is disappointing on a personal level. But, you know, you have to take the changes, you have to respect the changes, and you have to keep fighting. And, you know, I think I've had good form for Arsenal of late. Hopefully I can keep playing well, we can keep winning, and I can fight my way back in the team.
I never do this show to try and provoke controversial answers or anything like that, but I will ask, you mentioned there that you've gone from England captain to playing just the one game in qualification. A lot of players might throw in the towel based on that, but what have you done to try and keep yourself motivated to ensure that you are keeping yourself considered for an England squad place?
I heard a quote once about, you know, every setback is an opportunity for a comeback, and I'm a big believer in that. You know, it is a setback for me. Yes, it's not ideal that I've only played one game. I love playing for my country. It's the biggest honour and biggest privilege I could ever have, and I've done it 117 times. I want to do it another 117 times, but unfortunately my age won't allow that. But, you know, I'm training every single day to try and keep myself in the best possible condition. I'm going out every weekend and every game for Arsenal trying to prove myself. And I want to play well for my club. It's not just you know, playing well to play for England. I want to play well for Arsenal. I want us to win things, and I want to be integral into doing that. So, you know, all I can do is keep fighting, keep preparing and trying to play well.
Was the move to Arsenal from Lincoln Ladies last year, was that kind of a stepping stone to trying to achieve that? Was that one of the reasons that you decided to move? I've heard you quoted as saying that you wanted to go to a club where you could win trophies. You've already managed to do that with a potential second one on the way this year. But was the move guided very much also by the hope of being able to continue your England career a little bit longer as well?
Absolutely. There was lots of reasons to move from Lincoln. One was to win trophies, which I've already been able to do, having, you know, got an FA Cup winners medal in my cabinet already, being in a Continental Cup final obviously to come. And I love the way Arsenal play football. You know, we play out from the back and we play through the thirds, and that was something I was really keen on doing. You know, I wanted to be on the ball a lot more, and that's no disrespect to the way Lincoln played, but we didn't play football the way Arsenal do. So that was really, really important for me to go there for that reason. Personal reasons, obviously, with a family coming, I wanted to be closer to family as well. But yes, it was to try and, you know, train every day, be the best I could, be around some of the best players in the world to make sure that I could continue playing for England.
You mentioned family there. Couple of months, just shy, going to be a mum. Tell me about the excitement that is currently surrounding your family at the moment.
Massively excited, a little bit scared, I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to interrupt Casey there, because as soon as I mentioned that, this big beaming smile came across her face, which can tell you the pride that she's feeling at the moment, but carry on.
Yeah, I suppose there's happiness, there's anxiety, there's worry, all the things, but the overriding emotion is just, I absolutely can't wait. You know, obviously we don't want them to come too early, so I can wait for them till November. But yeah, mum's happy, dad's happy, obviously all Megan's family's happy, and we just can't wait to meet them now, and I can't wait to hold them, and I you know, just to have a family of my own.
For anyone that doesn't know, you've obviously had your head stuck in the sand. Casey is expecting twins with her partner Megan. I think it's about 6 or 7 weeks away from the time of this show being recorded. I do have one question. Obviously it's quite a big deal in modern day society to have same-sex parents. How much thought did you have to give in terms of how you would announce it and how you would kind of make it public? Because you are seen as a role model in women's football. We will talk a bit more about you coming out earlier this year as well. But in terms of how you approached it, how much discussion did you have to have with Megan and your family and those people around you?
It was a great deal of thought and discussion went into it, because obviously it doesn't just affect me, it affects Megan, it affects her family and it affects my family. And with society being the way it still is at times, in terms of a lot of homophobia still being rife, you know, you never know what you're going to face. So I had to make sure my family were comfortable with it, Megan's family were comfortable with it, which obviously they were, you know, and they're very, very supportive. And that was one of the reasons I decided to come out as well, was because obviously we were planning on having a family. Yes, there are still a lot of judgments made on about same-sex families, but, you know, my answer to that is, what does a normal family look like? You know, you have kids being raised by single parents, mums and dads. Some people have two mums, some people have two dads. You know, as long as you have a loving environment and a caring environment, that's what's the main thing for the child.
You obviously made that decision to make it public through your, I think it was through your BBC column. What sort of reaction did you get, and how overwhelmed have you been by a lot of positive messages that I've actually seen people aim in your direction?
Well, it just proved to me by the reaction that society has changed or is changing, because the response in my head when I decided to do it, which took me so long to do, was I thought it was going to be negative. I thought we were going to face a hell of a lot of prejudice. I thought that I was going to face some really, really troubling times. And actually, I couldn't have been further from the truth. The response was so overwhelming from social media, you know, people saying, like, thank you for sharing your story, and the emails and responses that I've received so far, just saying that, you know, having people like me visible and being out and being gay and sort of not hiding has given other people the strength to do the same thing within their work circles, within their social circles. And that's what it was all about. It was never about, you know, me sending a message in terms of my family and stuff, because they've known since I was 15, 16. The women's football world has known since I was young as well, so in my circles they've always known. But it was about, you know, other people outside of those circles and the struggles that people go through in day-to-day life, and the struggles that I went through when I was younger, you know, just trying to help those people, encourage them to be comfortable with themselves.
I would never ask you to name anyone because it's a very personal thing, but if, as a result of coming out, have you had players or individuals kind of contact you and say, you know, thank you so much for what you did, because it's allowed me to kind of speak to my family and my friends and really open up about who I am and what I'm about?
Yes, I've had quite a lot actually, from complete random strangers messaging me on Twitter or Facebook, or, you know, actually sending me an email to say thank you for what you did, because actually it's given me the strength to talk to my family. I had a parent saying thank you to me because it allowed their daughter to go to them and talk to them about her struggles. And just recently Megan had an email from someone who she hasn't spoke to for many years saying thank you, because it gave me the strength to be who I am in my circles. And it was someone who was actually a teacher who then went and explained to her kids at school that she was having a baby in a same-sex relationship. And just thanked us, really. And I've got to be honest, I never expected the response that we got, and if it helped one person, then it was well worth it.
I've got to say, how have you kind of dealt with almost, I wouldn't say being the face of women's football this year, but certainly someone that people recognise more and more? I speak to friends of mine who have absolutely no interest in women's football, but they know who Kelly Smith is and they know who Casey Stoney is because of the strides that you've made this year in coming out and almost acting like a role model to a lot of people. With that probably comes some pressure and lots of demands for interviews, like people from myself who are nosy and want to ask lots of questions. But how have you kind of dealt with that, and, you know, how has it impacted your life?
It's obviously been a busy time since February. There have been a lot of requests for interviews and stuff, but at the same time, I have to say yes to some and no to some, depending on my time restraints. And my focus has always been football. You know, I'm a footballer. Football is my, you know, my priority. But at the same time, I think you can't do an interview like that and then back it up with nothing. So I'm always willing to talk to people. I'd like to think I'm always honest. And if I've got to be really honest, I never ever set out to be a role model or to be a trailblazer, as people have been saying. You know, I was asked to do the interview 2 years ago. I said no at the time because I wasn't ready. And then I just felt like, yes, now I was England captain, I felt like I had a responsibility to speak out. And I felt like if you can use your profile, whether it be big or small, and you can use it in a positive way, then I wanted to do that. You know, and if it means that, you know, I've become a role model by doing that, even more of a role model, then great. But I never set out, for me it was never about, you know, raising my profile or anything like that, because I think people need to realise that when you do come out, you're so frightened of the consequences and what's going to happen, and I don't know what long term effect it's going to have, whether it's going to be used against me in any long term role, I don't know. But for now it's been positive, and I'm really pleased with what's happened, and I couldn't be more happy that I've been able to help other people.
You mentioned that football is your priority. I know from speaking to you before we started the interview that it's been such a massive, massive part of your life, and I think you described it as your haven.
Yeah.
Did coming out, I guess it's a silly question in a way, but I guess how much did coming out affect your football in a positive way? Did it allow you to play with more freedom? Did you notice a difference in terms of how you were taken to the pitch?
I don't think I noticed the difference, but I feel like, especially second part of the season, I've been playing probably the best football that I've played since I've been in the WSL, and for some reason scoring more goals than I've ever scored in the WSL. So I suppose that's a positive. I think the positive thing is now that I'm just completely and 100% comfortable in my own skin, and I probably haven't felt that way until I decided to come out publicly and just be myself. And, you know, I'm expecting a family as well, which is a massive positive in my life. And I just think the happier you are off the pitch, the better performances that personally I felt like I've given on it.
Mentioning family again, How many baby books have you read in the last few months?
Quite a few. Yeah, I like to do a bit of reading anyway, so I'm trying to educate myself. Obviously, I've had no babies before, so I'm starting off with my eyes completely closed and, you know, going in, obviously, with a bit of trepidation. But no, I'm looking forward to it. We've got a fantastic support network around us, so we're really, really lucky in that sense, you know, and we just can't wait to meet them. And I think you learn by doing, don't you? So I'm sure we'll make mistakes along the way, but hopefully we'll get the majority of stuff right.
Are we going to get an exclusive on the show? Have you got any names in mind?
We've got a few names in mind, but I've got to be honest, between me and Megan, we can't make a decision for love nor money. So yeah, they'll probably be about 6 months old before we decide a name. But yeah, we've got sort of four or five boys' names and four or five girls' names ready for when they're born.
There's lots of women's football names that might make for interesting baby names. I can imagine a little martyr or a...
I think Megan would kill me if I came up with a women's football name, so we'll be avoiding that. But no, we've got some cute little names, and I think we'll wait till they're here. And obviously we don't know what we're having either, so we have to have a few of each ready.
We want the babies to be walking. We don't want them diving all over the place anyway, so we won't call them Marta. But that's just my tongue-in-cheek comment. I guess for you, well, the last 8-9 months have been quite chaotic for you in terms of you've moved clubs, you came out, you've announced that you're having a family, you're fighting for an England place. How are you kind of, even for someone of your experience, I'm not going to say age because you're similar age to me and we are by no way past it, but for someone with your experience, even then it must be quite challenging. How have you kind of dealt with it all?
Well, as we spoke about earlier before we started the interview, when I was younger, I felt I used football as a haven from my personal life. It was, you know, safety net for me. And now it's complete reverse. As I've got older, I think my personal life is now my haven from football, because obviously I've had quite a lot of disappointments this year, losing in the captaincy, not really playing for England, starting off the season with Arsenal with barely a win to our names. But I always went home, you know, to Megan, where I was happy, expecting a family, so I could always kind of draw back on those positives. So I'd love to get my football back on track. I'd love to, you know, start playing for England again if that's possible, and I'll keep fighting for that. But I'm quite a resilient person, you know. My life's been up and down at times, and you have to have I think you have to have resilience in life to keep bouncing back, and I'm just going to bounce back again, you know. And I'm really lucky that I've got Megs, because, you know, when I think everything's doom and gloom, she always manages to put things into perspective and keep me grounded and you know, keep me fighting, really.
Do you ever look too far ahead? I mean, obviously we know what is in store for you for the coming months in changing nappies and sleepless nights and everything else that will come with it, but beyond that, obviously there's a World Cup next year, but do you think further ahead than that, or is that pretty much the goal that you've got in mind at this present time?
I don't think I can be afforded the luxury to look any further than the World Cup, to be honest with you, because of the situation that I'm in, where, as you say, I've only played one game under the new manager. So for me, my main fight and my only focus is to make sure I'm on them steps on that plane getting to Canada in the first place. You know, I don't think I can look any further than that at the moment, and everything I'll do between now and then will to be make sure that I get on that plane.
We talked a little bit beforehand and I asked the question, you know, what sort of interest do you have maybe when you finish up playing? Not that we hope that that's not going to be for a few years. I mentioned that I thought you put in a very good performance on BT Sport the other day. I would personally like to see you doing some more punditry work, because you've already admitted that you are very honest. But you mentioned that coaching is something that you're very interested in.
I think, if I'm honest, this game is my passion. And as much as I love talking about it, yes, I love being a pundit. I enjoy my experiences at doing it. I'd like to think I'm honest when I do it, and I'd like to think that I bring a bit of knowledge to the table when I do it. But this game is my passion, so I'd love to be able to coach or manage a team, stay in a game. You know, I did my B licence years ago. I need to do my A licence, which I'm looking at doing this winter, with the help of the PFA, hopefully. And I'd love to be involved with players. Being out on the pitch is you know, the nothing beats playing, I don't think. But the second best thing is getting out there with the players and coaching and managing, and I'd love to be able to do that.
You've obviously played under, and you've already mentioned this season, you will have played under 5 different coaches. You've obviously played under lots of different managers over a long career. You played under Hope for virtually your whole England career. Obviously, Mark has come in lately. What's the kind of main thing you think you've picked up from the coaches that you've worked under, or the most important thing that you've picked up?
I think the most important thing is to know your players and to get to know your players as people, as well as the athletes that they are when they go out on the pitch. To know what makes them tick, know what their motivations are, know why they're out there playing. And I think if you get to know your players and you can talk to them, you can relate to them, you can earn their respect, then you can get the most out of them. Because I think at international level, everybody's good there because they're good enough, technically, tactically, you know. And obviously, we're all still learning, even at 32. God, I'm still learning every single day about the game. But if you can get to know your players and I think care about them, like, you know, and I've had a lot of managers that have maybe misjudged me in the past, you know, and then got to know me and realised that actually, you know, I'm not a bad person. I do work hard to do what I do, and, you know, I'll continue to work hard. But, you know, I think that's one of the lessons that I'd learn, and I have to quote Keith Bonus, because he was so influential in my career when I nearly gave up in 2005, and he backed me and he worked with me and he just cared about me, and I still have a very close relationship with him because of that. And, you know, and he's been a fantastic influence in my life. And, you know, other people judge him based on, you know, he used to scream on the sidelines and stuff, and to be fair, that was what we needed at the time. But away, off the pitch, and what he did for me on a personal level, was, I don't think I'd be where I am now if it wasn't for his influence.
Do you look back at that time? You mentioned 2005, when you were, you know, overlooked for that England squad. In no way is it, I would say, a similar situation now, but do you look back at that time and look at the fight that you had to put in and the attitude that kind of had to be tuned in and think, do you know what, this is what I need to be doing this time round, and this is what I'm aiming for in terms of getting on the plane for Canada?
I'm a massive believer in that life is about choices and making the right decisions at the right times. And in 2005, I had a choice to make. I could have sat back and felt sorry for myself and kept moaning and, you know, talking to people and saying, woe me. But I decided that, you know, that's not going to get me anywhere. So actually, what I need to do is put in the effort, put in the practice. And I'm so glad I did, because, you know, I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I was going training before I went to work. And I was fortunate enough, you know, that I had that attitude and I had that mentality where I was going to work hard and I was going to put in, you know, the time and the effort, and I was going to try my best. Because I just think, you know what, I don't want to look back in 20 years time and think, like, if only I'd have tried, if only I'd have worked harder. I'd rather go out fighting and look back and think I gave it my best and it still wasn't good enough, you know. And I'm in that position now. Yes, I am a little bit older, you know, it's maybe a different fight now, but 2005 was a springboard for me. You know, and I can't say it's a springboard now, but I'm still going to fight, you know, and I'm still going to do the things I did back then in terms of mentality and working hard to try and prove myself.
Women's football's come a long way in that time. One of the things that has been hugely campaigned for is for an England international to take place at Wembley. You obviously had the privilege and the honour of leading Team GB out at Wembley during the Olympics a couple of years ago. Again, Casey's face lights up when I mention that. England against Germany, 23rd of November. I guess that must be a huge aim for you as well.
Absolutely. To play at Wembley, you know, I've experienced it in a home Olympics. It can't get any better than that. But to be able to have an England game there and to play against such a nation like Germany, I think to pit ourselves against the best in the world, I think is going to be a really, really good test. You know, even if I'm involved in the squad, it will be fantastic. I'd love to play on the evening. We'll have to wait and see. But for any player that gets out there and plays at Wembley, it'll be an experience they'll never forget. But it's not just going there for the experience. This is a crucial friendly in terms of preparations for a World Cup, to play against the best, to see where we are, and to see where we are in terms of the new formation and how much we've got to do, or if we're on the right track for the World Cup.
I mentioned Team GB. I guess I look back at that as a supporter that was sat in the stands and look at the exposure that it gave you guys and the platform that it allowed you to kind of present the skills and the abilities that women's football has, but not just that, but the attitude and the fight that I think when you showed against Brazil. Is it a case now of trying to, the England-Germany game is an opportunity to kind of build on that, but is it a case of needing more opportunities like that? Because we've seen the WSL expand, we've seen more of an interest in terms of media, but now is it an opportunity to try and build on that and get more internationals at Wembley and get more exposure through the media and get more people like yourself speaking out against important issues?
Absolutely. I think it's all about visibility, isn't it? Visibility and awareness, and games at, you know, games like the one at Wembley is massive in terms of giving women's football a platform. the Olympics did so much for our sport, you know, and if we can go to the World Cup next year and get to the semi-finals and do enough to qualify for Rio, I think it's imperative that we have a team in Rio, because it just gives our game a platform it's never had before. I know the men's team probably won't have a team. They don't need necessarily the exposure the Olympics gives you. Our game does need it, you know, and like you say, WSL is growing. I think it's a fantastic league. Obviously, it's being covered, you know, weekly in terms of BT Sport and different networks like that. I think social media plays a massive part in the women's game that doesn't necessarily play in the men's game. So, you know, it's an exciting time for women's football, but unless we have big occasions like at Wembley where you can draw in hopefully 30, 40,000 and give it more exposure to a new audience, you know, we're not going to get there. So I think it's a massive night for us. I think it's a great opportunity to showcase our sport and showcase what England's capable of.
And people like me doing our little bit as well, trying to anyway. World Cup next year, one topic that's been quite heavily discussed and I'd be interested to get your views is turf. And 3G and this notion that FIFA are perhaps devaluing women's football by having a World Cup on turf when they would probably never have a men's World Cup. And I think I wouldn't even use the term probably. I don't think we'd ever see a men's World Cup on turf. There was obviously a lot of publicity this last week about Wales's men's team playing in Andorra on a pretty pathetic looking 3G pitch. What's your view on the situation?
I think I come at it from a view where actually, obviously, Canada's was, I think there was only two bids to host the World Cup, and Canada's was actually the best bid. And when it was bid to be on turf. So I think at the moment I'm at a point where the decision's been made. We can't change it. In terms of leaving a legacy in Canadian football, in terms of turf, I think that's going to obviously leave a massive legacy for Canada because of obviously their weather problems and stuff like that. It will leave pitches that people can use for years to come. Do I want to play on it? If I have to, yes. You know, and actually, we train on it a lot anyway. We play against Liverpool and Everton on it. I believe, having spoken to Martha Harris, who went to the Under-20s World Cup, the surfaces were actually quite good, you know, and the girls never really had any complaints. I believe, you know, obviously the American national team are having quite a debate about it in the moment, but from what I know, a lot of the games in America are on turf in their league season, so they'll be used to it. All you can do is prepare to play on it, and that's what we need to do. We need to make sure that if we're going to fight for anything, I think we need to fight to make sure our training venue pitches are the same as the pitches that we're going to be playing on. That's the most important. You're not training on grass and then going on to AstroTurf. You need to be training on the pitch surfaces that you're going to be playing on in the World Cup.
It's interesting. I have seen some quotes from England under 20 players about those surfaces and actually saying that, do you know what, they weren't so bad. But it's interesting. I saw a quote from someone saying that it's not a case of women's footballers playing on turf. It's a case of having turf at a Women's World Cup. I think they compared it to like a meal. So if it would be like serving a roast dinner to a men's side and serving fish and chips to a women's side or something like that. That's the way they compared it anyway. But yeah, interesting comparison. Well, look, we'll do some quick fire questions because I can't have you on the show and not ask some insightful things about teammates and things like that. So first question I will ask is, who is the best player that you've played with?
Easy, Kelly Smith.
What about played against?
Kelly Smith. That was easy.
We'll end it there then. Funniest moment at the Arsenal training ground or dressing room this season?
Well, it was hilarious, but I think it hurt her at the time. Was Christy Murray, who plays for us, managed to run face first into a mannequin, fall over it and land on it, which was at the time... Well, I was laughing after asking her if she was okay, but I'm sure it hurt, but it was brilliant.
I'm not going to say most skillful because that'll be Kelly Smith as well. Okay, most skillful player.
Frida Aisi.
Really?
Yeah, technically her feet are unbelievable at times, so exciting to see what can come out of her in the next couple of years.
Most influential person on your career inside football and outside football? I think I know what it'll be for outside.
Inside football, probably Keith Bonus. Obviously, speaking about him earlier, had a massive influence on my career. Outside of football, I'd probably have to say Megan Harris.
I thought you were going to say your mum, Sandra, but Megan is equally as influential, I'm sure. Who is the fastest player that you've ever come up against?
Frank Kirby. I thought Marta was quick until I played against Fran, and she's absolutely lightning. So, yeah, I'd have to say her.
who is the most likely player that you've ever played with who is going to come out with a comment that leaves people rolling their eyes?
Jordan Nobbs has the ability to say the most inappropriate things at the most inappropriate times.
Your card is marked, Jordan. Your card is marked. When I next interview you, I will be trying to get something interesting out of you. Who is the person who can clear a dance floor with their, let's say, interesting moves?
Oh, that's a good question. God, I'm going to go Remy Allen. I'm going to go Remy Allen on after she's had a few wines. She'll probably deny it, but yeah, definitely Remy.
Okay, you're quite active on social media. If you were to recommend one person to follow on social media, who would it be?
Piers Morgan. He's absolutely brilliant, makes me laugh, very controversial, always got an opinion, but brutally honest and also quite funny.
Okay. Final question, and it's, I know it's an obvious one that a lot of players get asked. What's the most influential piece, or what's the most important piece of advice you've ever been given as a footballer?
I suppose it's boring, but the most important bit of advice was there is actually no shortcut to success, and you have to work hard every day to achieve something. So, you know, when you're trying to cheat and run around cones and cut off, you know, a few metres and stuff, it don't work. The only one you're cheating is yourself. And actually, that's probably the best bit of advice. There's no shortcut to success, and you know, you only ever cheat yourself, unfortunately. That's really boring, but it's true.
It's not boring at all. But actually, do you know what? Now, you mentioned earlier you've become a bit prolific in front of goal. I should ask, what's been your favourite goal in your career?
Oh, do you know what? It's absolute tapping from a yard. But I've got to say, I scored in the Olympics, and I'm probably never, ever going to have the opportunity to do that again. So, yeah, the goal at Cardiff against Cameroon was my favourite.
Role model, face of women's football, big advocate for lots of things in football and outside football. Casey, it's been an honour. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.